Looks like we might have some movement finally in the move to legalize abortion through the state constitution. It's Today in Ohio, the news podcast discussion from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. I'm Chris Quinn. I am here with Lisa Garvin, Laura Johnston, and Layla Tassi. And Laura is very excited that it's a Friday because next week she will be off and free of any responsibilities, including this podcast. Laura, you ready or are you dreading like another day of work where you have to get stuff done first?
Oh, no. Everybody's been great. I think we've had good news this week. And no, it's all the stories just have to come in on time. And I'm sure it'll be fantastic.
Okay, I'll call you every night just to keep you in touch with the newsroom. I'm just kidding. Let's begin. Do we finally have movement in Ohio to legalize abortion through the state constitution? Lisa, who's behind it? Why are they feeling confident? Man, it's taken so long to get there. Michigan already has an amendment ready to go.
But we're not quite there yet in Ohio, but we're certainly laying the groundwork. The Planned Parenthood Advocates of Ohio and other reproductive rights groups are planning a constitutional amendment for the Ohio ballot, but they're saying in coming years. They're excited, and, you know, because of this 20% margin of victory in Kansas, with where they had abortion on the ballot there. But Lauren Blauvelt Copeland with the Planned Parenthood Advocates says they're really, their first step is this November. The elections for the Ohio Supreme Court are incredibly important to them. They are endorsing Democrats in all the contests. So they are endorsing Marilyn Zayas, who is opposing the incumbent Pat DeWine. And they're also endorsing Terry Jamison, who is facing Patrick Fisher. And of course, they're, you know, advocating for Jennifer Bruner to be the Chief Justice to replace retiring Maureen O'Connor and not Sharon Kennedy. And they're, you know, supporting Nan Whaley and all Ohio House and Senate Democrats that have called for the amendment. But they do agree that it's an uphill battle. We already have a veto-proof supermajority in Ohio that may stay the same after the November election. We'll have to see. But the Ohio ballot question, if it comes, would be different than Kansas, because Kansas, the right to abortion was guaranteed by their Supreme Court in 2019. That is not true in Ohio. So the ballot question, if it arrives, would be, should the right to abortion be guaranteed in the Ohio Constitution?
Well, forgetting the abortion issue, Pat DeWine and Sharon Kennedy have shown throughout this year that they're really not fit to serve as justices anymore. So with any luck, they won't be there. What they've done with gerrymandering and Pat DeWine's huge conflicts of interest, forget whether they'll rule on abortion. They're just not making good rulings. The idea that they're focused on the election instead of getting this on the ballot will, though, delay the protections for women in Ohio. So that means there's going to be a longer period here where women can't get abortions without going out of state. I'm just surprised, given the speed that they used in Michigan to get the signatures for the amendment, to get it going, that we haven't done the same thing here. Are we just lethargic in Ohio?
I honestly don't know. It's kind of puzzling to me as well. And we had our Democratic candidates for governor and U.S. Senate kind of whiff on, you know, what specific abortion protections they would lobby for. So that's kind of interesting as well. I honestly don't know. Obviously, it's not going to make this November ballot. So the next time a constitutional amendment would come up would be 2024, correct?
Is that right? That only can be in a general election year? It can't be in
I honestly, I don't know. I honestly
thought it
don't
could.
Know.
We'll check. We'll find out. The Republicans did wake up on Wednesday in some fear that Kansas vote was so powerful that Republicans now know this will be an issue that persuades voters to vote one way or the other. And so elections that seemed guaranteed red aren't guaranteed red. The power, I mean, let's face it, Kansas is a red state, but it was overwhelming to say, no, there is a right to abortion. So all of these Republicans that have stood on abortion as an issue are in trouble, and we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, there's a glimmer of hope for Democrats.
Yeah, I think there's more than a glimmer. I do think the idea of Democrats pushing the fringiest of fringe right candidates to so that they would oppose them in November is dangerous, like what happened in Arizona with the crazy woman that denies the election. It's now the Republican candidate. If she wins because of the work the Democrats did to get her in as a candidate, Arizona is going to be ruled by somebody who's kind of a loon. And that's happened in other states. It's a very risky proposition. That we'll have to see how people turn out in November. It's Today in Ohio. A newish Ohio law gives local governments the ability to quash proposed wind farms. And after the Crawford County commissioners did just that, Apex Clean Energy decided to take advantage of another part of the new law. Laura, what is the company doing? And credit to Pete Krause. Since he became our environmental reporter, he has just come up with a series of gems.
Yeah, this is fascinating. So they are going straight to the voters. And that's the first time that any company is doing that for a wind farm in Ohio, because this is a relatively new law. So this is the result of Senate Bill 52. It was passed last summer, and obviously it gave these authorities the right to regulate it in their area rather than leaving their fate to the Ohio Power Siting Board. So Crawford County in May, they created this wind farm exclusion zone to prevent Apex Clean Energy from this 300 megawatt Honey Creek wind project that's north of the county seat of Bucyrus. And these are massively tall wind turbines, taller than the Statue of Liberty. And the idea is that they can build fewer of them and get more wind because they're higher up. So Apex thinks that they have enough valid signatures for the question to be put on the November 8th ballot, that they're a Virginia-based company, and then they would be able to submit straight to the siting board if the voters approve it, and the siting board still has to approve all utility-scale power projects.
Yeah, I like what some of the people in this story said, that this really should go to the people no matter what, that this shouldn't be a decision made by commissioners. But the only way you can put it before the people is if the government creates the exclusion zone. Like, the government could not say, you know what, let's let the people decide. Maybe we should have this. They can't. So they have to create the exclusion zone and then leave it up to the energy company to get the signatures, which some said is a referendum in and of itself. If they can't get the signatures, clearly there's no will.
Correct. And I think, although they did say that, right, they said, I don't want to be responsible for making this decision. But they also said there was about 1,000 people at the hearing to create the exclusion zone, and 80% of them were for the exclusion zone, and speakers were about 2-1 in favor of it. So I don't know if they were just in favor of the idea of the vote, or they really don't want wind turbines, because obviously these go up in rural areas. You have to have a lot of land to be able to place them. And we've gotten a lot of pushback from people, not just the ones on the lake here, which obviously that had a huge amount of controversy and opposition. But, you know, nobody really.
Though.
Yeah, there's a huge difference.
The lake, you had the migratory birds, yes, and you also had the deterioration and all of the other factors.
I completely agree, but people are still against it.
But why? I it's almost like it's misinformation. I don't understand. I didn't see anything in the story where somebody articulated a clear reason to not like them.
I've heard people talk about noise, even though, like, I haven't heard that, you know, specifically when driving past turbines. Some people don't. They think it's sight pollution. They just don't want to see it on the horizon. Some people, you know, there are crazy conspiracy theories. I don't exactly know. I just, where our cottage is in Canada, there are a whole lot of wind turbines, and there are an awful lot of farmers that have signs, you know, with a wind turbine and a red circle with a line through it.
You wonder if it's other forms of energy companies that are trying to stomp this out because they don't want the competition from wind.
Maybe.
Spreading misinformation.
That's entirely possible. Also, it could just be that people don't like anything new in their backyards.
Yeah, there was a comparison in the story to when electrification first came to the country and they started putting up utility poles and wires. People were very much against it because they thought it was ugly. I did wonder.
It is ugly.
there was somebody in the story that said, I'm not listening to either side. I did my own research. I know what I know. But he didn't really say what he knew.
He has a secretive vote. It's why the ballot box is private.
Yeah, I just wonder where he did his research. I hope it was not on Facebook rabbit holes. Good story by Pete Krause. It's on Cleveland.com, and you are listening to Today in Ohio. How can a Democrat who holds a seat in the Ohio House right now run to retain the seat as an independent after not throwing her hat in the ring in this week's primary? Layla, this story throws up into the air our entire partisan election system.
Yes, it does. State Representative Shayla Davis, she's a Garfield Heights Democrat. She's been serving as a placeholder since February in the House. She was appointed to fill a vacancy that was created when former state rep Stephanie House was elected to Cleveland City Council. Davis didn't file to run for this week's primary election before a filing deadline in May. And she said in an interview that she didn't plan to run. But she said she changed her mind in early June when the Ohio House Republicans passed that bill that would require genital inspections for any girl competing in sports whose gender identity was challenged. And so she decided to pull petitions on June 10th and filed her paperwork with the Cuyahoga County Board of Elections this week to run for Ohio's 18th House District. There was a wrinkle here because that's the seat that Sandra Williams was vacating after her resignation to take a lobbying job. And Williams's resignation left Darnell Brewer, the social services worker, who unsuccessfully applied for the seat that Davis was appointed to. He is the only name on the Democratic primary ballot. And of course, Shayla Davis, it was too late for her to jump onto that ballot. So his only challenger at this point would be Republican Shalira Taylor. And it's an overwhelmingly Democratic district. So he is going to win unless he has some kind of competition. So Davis decided when she pulled her petitions that she's going to try to run as a political independent. But she has quite a hurdle ahead of her because the County Elections Board won't formally certify independent candidates until it gets together later this month ahead of an August 28th deadline. And between now and then, someone could file a protest to her candidacy challenging whether she really is a political independent given her current status as a Democratic elected official. There's quite a bit of evidence that points to the fact that she's a Democrat. I mean, her website, I think, still says she's a Democrat.
I mean, she is a Democrat. There's no doubt about the fact she's a Democrat. Now, maybe the day she leaves office, she can say, I'm no longer aligned, but she wants to run in an election as an independent while she's a sitting Democrat in the House. And I get that the Ohio law, Andrew Tobias had a really fascinating, interesting explanation of this. And Ohio law is a little bit vague, so it could happen. But doesn't this argue we should just get rid of the whole party primary system and
have it
be nonpartisan? Let everybody run. And would that make us less divided if we just had people run for office based on their beliefs?
Yeah, I think about that all the time. I mean, yeah, it would. It would. But, I mean, we still would divide. We would divide ourselves on our value system and it would be clear who's who. Very quickly.
Wouldn't it be nice if it was a parliamentary system where you had to have compromise between parties because there's more than two of them and you never have a supermajority? That would be nice.
So says the Canadian native.
Oh my gosh.
Let's get rid of our government and go Canada style.
That's right.
Yeah, I feel for her because she's well-meaning. She's enjoying the life of a legislator, although a Democrat in the Ohio House is like completely powerless. But I don't know. I think her chance was to run for the seat as a Democrat, which she chose not to do. You have one or the other. Either you can't let her and you maintain the primary system, or you do let her and you say, okay, this whole thing is pretty silly. It's Today in Ohio. What do we know about the New Jersey lawyer who will make the final decision, before courts do, on whether to extend Deshaun Watson's punishment for being a predator who sexually assaulted massage therapists? Lisa Mary-Kate Cabot had an interesting subtext last night. She's saying, you know, the two sides ought to get together, agree on 10 games, agree to some fine, and just end this now, because Terry Pluto has laid out a process where this will go on forever and ever and ever. The next step is the New Jersey lawyer. Who is he?
His name is Peter C. Harvey. He is a former federal prosecutor and a former attorney general for the state of New Jersey. He's currently a partner at the New York-based law firm of Patterson and Belknap. In an NFL statement released yesterday, they say that Harvey has expertise in domestic violence and sexual assault cases. He has also been Commissioner Roger Goodell's designee in other arbitration cases, so he obviously has experience. He will address whether the discipline from Sue L. Robinson should be changed to include a longer suspension, an appropriate fine — there was no fine levied at all by Robinson — and an evaluation and treatment determined by medical experts of Watson's mental state. But under the collective bargaining agreement, Harvey's ruling will be final and binding. But as we know, the NFL Players Association is already poised to file a lawsuit.
If he is as good a lawyer as he appears to be, as we've discussed earlier, the judge's ruling on this was pretty ironclad. The 16 pages laid out in very clear detail why she was bound by NFL precedent to give him the punishment she gave him. So if this guy's that good, wouldn't you think that he would have to go along with it? I mean, there's no holes in what in her argument. She gave this the full review.
I think this is going to be very interesting, and I think that his ruling might surprise a lot of people. So, but I think the Players Association was glad that it wasn't going to be Roger Goodell, because he could have not, you know, assigned Mr. Harvey. He could have done it himself, and the NFL Players Association did not want that. But, you know, as Robinson stated in her report, she said, you know, doing this, changing this after the fact, changing the rules, has a ripple effect across the entire, you know, football league. And she was worried about that.
Yeah. Mary Kay Cabot, who's our chief Browns writer, said this was a very smart move by Roger Goodell, because this lawyer does understand this. He understands it. You know, he crosses every T, dots every I. He is the right person to weigh this and come out with a judgment. But I think you're right. I think a lot of people might be surprised. You could always throw in a fine. I mean, there was not a whole lot in the ruling that came out that explained why there wasn't a big fine. But to add games, I think, would compromise the integrity of the discipline process.
And as people have pointed out, you know, it was a woman who made this judgment, that, you know, the disciplinary for Sue L. Robinson. So we're questioning a woman's judgment. I mean, some people have brought that up.
She could have also ordered him into much more serious therapy. So maybe True. That's the way this goes. This will happen, I think, fairly quickly. But the lawsuits, if it changes dramatically, could last for a long, long time. It's Today in Ohio. What traffic nightmare looms for drivers on a much-traveled East Side artery? Laura, you have abandoned the East Side for the West Side. You won't have to drive on this much, but a lot of people will, and ooh, it's going to be bad.
Yeah, I used to drive Warrensville Center Road all the time. So this is Warrensville Center talking about a two-year project over the rapid train tracks at Shaker Boulevard, and that is already a congested area. So you're going to be replacing the bridge deck, the roadway, the drainage, and doing traffic signal improvements, installing a shared use path across the northbound structure. So it'll be like a biking and walking path. And this is going to start next spring. But man, they're going to maintain traffic. It's never going to be closed completely.
Yeah. It'll but be we're talking about still.
A four-lane road with turn lanes that's going to go to one lane in every direction. And, you know, that goes between 480 and all the way up to, you know, to Euclid and everything. That is not a fun road that you're going to be stuck in traffic on.
No, it'll be standstill for miles and miles. The thing that's odd is they're asking for public input. But when you read the story, it's the plan's done. What are they looking for input on? They want people to say, please don't do it. I want to be able to drive.
I don't know what they're going to be. I mean, maybe they're going to ask about the landscaping. I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's pretty far down the road. This is stuff they need to do. And obviously, nobody wants a potholed, horrible road to drive on. It's just the pain of getting to that process. And, you know, if there's only so many roads you can take east-west, you know, or north-south on the east side, and then they're big arteries, right? So is this going to change traffic patterns? Everybody's going to just be driving Cedar because no one wants to drive down to Shaker Boulevard. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, it will be messy for East Siders. When they were doing the intersection of Chagrin and Warrensville Center Road a few years back, it was extremely messy. Mm-hmm. This will be not fun next year for people on the East Side. It's Today in Ohio. There was a time when Pat O'Malley, the former Cuyahoga County recorder and brother of Cuyahoga County prosecutor Mike O'Malley, was in the news a lot for his public tussles and being arrested. We haven't heard from him much in the past 15, 16 years, but Parma police have just arrested him again. Layla, what's this about?
So back in April, Parma police responded to a mental health crisis incident at his home. And they say that he assaulted a police officer during that incident. So on Thursday, he pleaded not guilty to that charge. O'Malley is charged with felonious assault of a peace officer, assault of a peace officer, obstructing official business, and resisting arrest in Cuyahoga County Common Police Court. There wasn't a criminal case listed under O'Malley's name in Parma Municipal Court's online docket search on Thursday, so it's unclear whether he was booked into jail or released without charges after that after the initial incident. So there's still some question marks we have around this case, and it's hard to get sources to talk about this. O'Malley is, of course, the brother of Cuyahoga County Prosecutor Mike O'Malley. So Mike O'Malley has recused himself from the case. Erie County Prosecutor Kevin Baxter's office is going to handle the prosecution here.
Yeah, and it looks like, from our reporting, that this started with a call about mental health duress. And we generally don't write about that kind of thing. But because of Pat O'Malley's longtime background as a public figure, because he's the brother of the county prosecutor, for transparency and accountability, we pretty much have to write that story. I mean, the Parma police did not take him to a mental health ward. They charged him with a serious crime against a police officer. And in our watchdog role, we have to make sure that this case progresses as it would for anybody else, which is why we have a story about it on our website.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and you're right. He has a history. I mean, Pat O'Malley was charged with misdemeanor domestic violence in 2004 after his wife at the time accused him of shoving her into a doorway a month after she filed for a divorce. Those charges were dismissed after the prosecutor said Pat O'Malley had passed a lie detector test. And then after he was reelected in 2004 to his last term in office, he was sentenced to 15 months in federal prison after pleading guilty in 2008 to an obscenity charge. And that came from material that FBI agents who were investigating an unrelated matter that he was never charged for, they found on two personal computers that were seized from him some kind of material. So so he has, you know, he has stuff in his past that make this a story today.
Right. Which is why we're talking about it and covering
right.
it.
Right. But yeah, you're right. We are sensitive to matters of mental health crises, and so we do proceed carefully on stories of that nature.
Okay. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Who doesn't love seeing a monarch butterfly, but their populations are shrinking as their habitats disappear? What should we all be doing, Lisa, to help these gentle creatures thrive?
Well, in a nutshell, we should be planting more native species, and we should be planting lots and lots of milkweed, because that's the only food that monarch caterpillars eat. Susan Brownstein, the gardening editor for PlainDealerInCleveland.com, got three caterpillars from a Facebook group called the Monarch Maniacs of Ohio that has 5,000 members. What they do is they rescue and nurture monarch eggs, and experts, though, say that these kinds of efforts alone will not reverse the decline of the monarch population and may even do more harm than good. But honestly, if somebody gave me some monarch caterpillars to, you know, adopt, I would absolutely do it. But Brownstein says that this program educates urban and suburban gardeners on how to make differences in their little ecosystems to help the species survive. As I said before, looking up native plants like butterfly weed and other things that attract adult butterflies, but milkweed is really important here. It's not pretty. It's kind of a weed. It's very hard to grow from seed, but it is an essential food supply. So they're urging people to plant it and consider other, you know, having like a little meadow area that's kind of wild in their yard. Shaker Lakes Nature Center is holding a milkweed sale to raise funds and has information on their website about growing milkweed. I will tell you this, down at Euclid Beach, they have planted a lot of native milkweed and Joe Pye weed. And in September, full of monarch butterflies that are crossing the lake as they migrate south, usually around late August, early September. But they have a huge milkweed meadow there off of Euclid Beach that really attracts them.
Well, maybe as they plan what to do with the park that's replacing Horseshoe Lake, they could set aside a big part of it just for milkweed so that you could help the butterflies thrive. You're a gardener. Do you have milkweed in your yard or do the deer eat it?
I have butterfly weed and the deer keep eat, which would be for adults, but I took some milkweed pods from Euclid Beach last year and I couldn't get them to germinate.
Oh, wow. It's an interesting idea, but you say that it's ugly. It's not pretty.
Yeah, it's not a pretty, it's weedy. It looks like a weed. It's very tall. I mean, it has nice flowers, but it is a weed.
Yeah, it would look right at home in any of my gardens. You're listening to Today in Ohio. I'm going to go out of order. This still seems like problematic technology, given how long it takes, but NOAACA is getting in on the electric car charging stations. Layla, it still takes hours to get this done, but what's NOAACA's plan?
Well, reporter Pete Krause tells us that NOAACA plans to spend $4.14 million to create 47 public charging stations for electric vehicles across Greater Cleveland. They're going to be in 40 communities, mostly in Cuyahoga County, Lorain, Medina, Lake, and Geauga, and we should see them by 2023. The charging stations will be either level two, those offer 2 to 4 ports with a full charge time of 4 to 6 hours, or level three DC fast chargers. Those are 1 to 4 ports that provide a full charge in 30 to 60 minutes. Currently, there are fewer than 100 of these charging stations that are publicly accessible in the 5-county region of, you know, NOAACA's 5-county region. But they're saying that by 2050, NOAACA's region will have 144,000 electric vehicles that will need more than 2,000 public charging stations to adequately meet the demand. By 2050.
You're a mom with three kids.
I'm not waiting for that to charge.
You're a busy editor. Do you have 4 to 6 hours every time you want
to? Did you hear that? It was 30 to 60 minutes. That got so much better than I thought it was going to be.
It says 4 to 6 hours is going.
No, there's a couple of ports that are 30 to 60 minutes.
Yeah, but you only get 60 to 80 miles from that fast charge. Yeah. I think you only get 60.
That's not a full charge. Obviously, we all need to know more about how to charge electric batteries. But hey, we talked about this before with the idea about the truck stops doing this. Maybe if they put like a indoor play space at it in the middle of winter, I would totally go.
Laura, you are in action like a spinning top, never, ever coming to rest. Where in your work week, in your daily life?
Put them at a hockey rink. They have one at Winterhurst. I'm not kidding. They do. They have one at Winterhurst in Lakewood. They have two spots right there. So if you put them at places like a city hall complex where there's a rec center and there's a court and city hall and a whatever, then I would go there. That would be great.
If they offer free childcare at these charging stations, I would do it.
Okay. I'm tripping over this whole concept. We'll move on. It's Today in Ohio. Okay, Laura, I've been off most of this week, counting on you to ply me with stories, and we came up with one short for the week, so you get to talk about this one. What's the number one donut in Northeast Ohio, according to Yelp reviews?
Okay, it's not the newsiest story published this week, but it is one of the most popular with our readers. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to say that because, Northeast Ohio, we love donuts. And I would not have guessed this list because I feel like I knew the regulars like Jack Frost and Becker's. And in Rocky River, I really like Big Mouth Donut Company. But the number one donut, according to Yelp, is the Vegan Donut Company. And I would have been like, no, I don't need a vegan donut. But the comments that this said that the bakers have proven their donuts are even better than traditional flour and milk donuts. The flavors are strong but not overbearing, and the sweetness is just right. So people love this Vegan Donut Company in Cleveland. And this is a whole list of businesses in, it goes from Cuyahoga, Geauga, Lake, Lorain, Medina, Portage, and Summit County. So big area. Terrapin Bakery finished second in Cleveland, and then Jack Frost, Brunette's, Goldie's in Lyndhurst, Spud Nuts and Berea. But those first two, those were new to me.
So there's no milk, no eggs in the vegan donut companies. They're using
Yeah, apparently. So now I need to know if like you can have gluten-free donuts that are just as good because...
You know, I believe the vegan is probably delicious. Yesterday I had a vegan chocolate chip cookie at a coffee shop and it was exquisite. And I really was like, this is one of the best cookies I've ever had.
Really?
Yes. So I've got to try this donut now.
Okay, well, maybe the next time we have some special event in the office, we can get the vegan
donuts. Because we had
donuts.
Becker's last week, and people were like, oh, I really like Becker's. They were pleased with my selection, so I felt pretty proud of myself.
Okay.
And I live close to Goldie's. I'm a half mile from Goldie's, so
good.
If I want a Goldie's donut, I'm going to walk. But they, if you don't get there by 11 o'clock, it's empty. So that's how popular it is.
I literally have not had a donut in 21 years since I got diagnosed with celiac
disease. You need to find a gluten-free donut.
Well, but it's just not
Also,
worth
you
it.
Don't eat anything that's bad for you.
No,
so
that's not
that.
True. That's not true at all.
We'll bring you a yogurt.
Okay, moving on. It's Today in Ohio. That does it for the week of news. All right, have a good time off next week. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Layla. Thanks to everybody who listens to the podcast.